I'm Leo Green and welcome to my show here on lgradio.online. Today, a very special guest who has been a familiar and much-loved presence on our screens and on our stages, both in the West End and on Broadway. He's an actor who definitely falls into the national treasure category, inhabited by so few. He has starred in shows which now firmly nestle in the vaults of the country's favourites. In fact, just hearing the theme tunes conjure up memories of the countless hours he's spent entertaining us all. For nearly 50 years, his shows have been watched and loved by millions, and his presence on our TV screens have been a welcome familiarity in an ever-changing world. There's also been movies, award-winning performances on Broadway.
Anytime you're on the way, any evening, any day, you'll find us all doing the Lambeth Walk.
As well as countless award-winning performances here in London's West End.
Give them what they want, smooth and breezy,
exactly what they want,
and escape from the ennui.
And I'm delighted he's here with us today, Robert Lindsay. Thank you so much for joining us. I guess we all have a bit of spare time at the moment to talk and wander down memory lane. How are you getting on?
Well, I'm 70 now. It still shocks me completely. I don't feel it. I've had a few scares in the last couple of years, but I seem to be weathering the storm. This is a perfect time, as you say, for getting memorabilia together, and emptying drawers and finding pictures. I see Twitter's gone mad at the moment. People finding pictures of themselves when they were 20.
I guess by the age of 20, you were already out in the world working, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. I just left RADA. I was in rep then. That was the custom then. We had to work our card, get our blue card for equity. Long gone are those days.
Well, how about before that then, you know, growing up, how musical were you as a kid? Obviously, we've seen you in so many musicals over the years, but growing up, did you play any instruments?
The only thing I learned as a kid was recorder and then flute.
Really?
And then I loved my penny whistle. I absolutely adored my penny whistle, and I had to play many times when I left drama school, and then for some reason I ended up playing penny whistles in various plays I did.
The classic instrument of our time. Do you play anything else? I have heard you in the past talk about the trumpet.
I only picked up the trumpet when I was asked to do this play, Clap Hands, Here Comes Charlie, Peter Barnes's play, and which I really still want to do one day. Funny enough, he's about a homeless guy, which has been quite topical now, I think.
Absolutely.
And I had to play the trumpet all the way through it. And I remember Benny rang up and said, "Oh, this guy's brilliant. Get him on the phone. Here's his number."
But when you were going through that training at RADA then, how much of the syllabus was spent on music and musical theatre?
RADA was not musically based at all. In fact, there was no music classes, which is bizarre because it's really funny working in New York, how all the actors I worked with in, like, Me and My Girl, when I did Me and My Girl in the 80s, they all seem to be, the triple threat. You know, they all play something, they all sing, they all dance, they all act.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that at RADA they didn't get involved with the musical theatre training back then. I'm just wondering out loud here if it's some kind of snobbish thing, because I know from my own experience that when I was at the Royal Academy of Music studying on their jazz course many years ago, it was like an unquestioned rule that the jazz students weren't allowed to use the grand pianos.
Oh, my God.
I guess it's another example of the class system we have in this country, where musicals are somehow thought of still as the poor cousin of the serious play. You can't imagine the Broadway actors and actresses in New York thinking of that, can you?
No, you can't imagine that in New York, because class doesn't exist in New York. Well, money exists, but you're right. Class exists in every single aspect of our daily lives in this country, whether it's music, art. I mean, I love my profession because I'm from a working class background, East Midlands, mining town. I had a big working class chip on my shoulder. Christ, I played Citizen Smith, for God's sake. You know, I was the sort of urban revolutionary for years.
Yeah.
And one thing I love about my profession is it is classless.
Have you always felt like that? You know, you never felt the theatrical or showbiz world was somehow unattainable to someone from your background, at least back then, because obviously things did change. But do you think now that perhaps we've gone back to feeling like drama school is still seen as an exclusive experience or only available for the well-off?
No, I mean, it's interesting how, you know, there's a lot of young actors now, because probably last year I got maybe just over 100 letters from kids asking if I could help them financially go through drama school, and that's increasing. I'm just getting them all the time, because when I went to drama school in the 60s, we had grants from our local councils, and they stopped, the Conservatives stopped that, and so therefore the people now who are at drama school tend to have been at Harrow or Eton, so there's very much an upper class actor, hence the fact that we are now getting Downton Abbeys, and you look at the Maynards and the Damien Lewises and the Benedict Cumberbatches, and they are what I call posh actors. But actually I've worked with three of them, and they don't behave like that at all. They just embrace whoever.
Whatever it takes to get the gig, I guess.
Yeah, get the gig, quite right.
I mean, that does raise an interesting point. Do you think something like Citizen Smith, for example, would get commissioned today amongst The Crown and Downton Abbey?
I wonder. Yeah. Funny enough, I've just had an email from an old producer friend of mine, Peter Anthord, who produced GBH that we did for Channel 4. And he does lots of lectures, and he shows certain scenes of GBH to his students, and then people go, wow, didn't know, you know, they made shows like that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned before you've just turned 70, and I guess you really are part of that generation that were on the cusp and went through all the social changes as well as the films that were being made around that time. It's the music, wasn't it, that went through such a huge change, going from the likes of Perry Como and Sinatra and all the great crooners to something completely different.
Yeah.
And how did that affect you personally, seeing people like the Beatles, your age, make such a great impact on the arts and beyond? It must have hit home with so many of your generation.
Absolutely. The Beatles had such an impression on me, and for many, many reasons, because they were from my background.
Sure.
You know, they were the first people to use their own accents, you know, and they were very much themselves, you know, they behaved as themselves. And of course, I went to drama school, and to lose my accent, I had a very broad Derbyshire accent. And that's cool now, to keep your accent.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Were you told to lose that Derbyshire accent because you were reticent to do so, or because you felt you had to if you wanted to be employed?
Well, as my voice teacher used to say, we can't understand a word you're saying, Robert. You know, so suddenly I was talking like this, and, you know, being the round town, you know. And so going back to my mining town, going up to the Three Horseshoes on a Friday, when I got back from RADA on a Friday night, people would all step back, you know. Bloody hell, what are you talking like that for?
Yeah.
Because my dad loved it, of course, because he said, you might end up as a bloody dustman, but God, you'll sound very good.
And just getting back to the music, because the relationship between music and actors, I think, is fascinating, because so often the two crafts are intrinsically linked. If you think about how many great singers like Frank Sinatra or Barbra Streisand were, of course, actors as well. Did you grow up with much music around you?
My uncle was a singer with a band. And my uncle Sir, who died actually in the Second World War, he was a sergeant major in the Sherwood Foresters, and my dad had some very bad recordings of him actually, but he was a great crooner, and I think he did pubs and clubs and things just before the war.
Right.
And then my dad had a lovely voice. He really sang beautifully. He was a real crooner. And music was always, every Christmas, that's what we all did. We all gave a piece. We all did a piece.
What was your piece? What was your song?
What do you want to make those eyes of me for? If they don't mean what they say. Who's that? That was
Freddie Cannon.
Yeah, well done. Okay. I think he'll be my phone a friend if I do Mastermind.
Well, that's what's so great about music. Those those early musical memories, and a song like that, it never leaves you, does it?
Oh my God, yeah, yeah. And because I know every single word of it still, and I goes. But then the really weird thing was, I mean, just after Rada, I think the first film I ever did after Rada was, of course, That'll Be the Day,
right,
with Ringo and Billy Fury and Keith Moon and David Essex and that whole gang, you know, that was
wow.
Weird. And I played the bloody dumb schoolboy. But the really weird thing was, one night in, it was filmed in Shanklin on the Isle of Wight, and we're there for about 3 months, 3.5 months. Yeah. And Ringo decided to throw a little party on a beach. There was like a Chinese restaurant that was near a beach, and the garden was like the beach.
Yeah.
And that night, John Lennon and George Harrison appeared. They I think they came down in a helicopter or something, but I remember the big buzz going around that John Lennon and George was down. And then the next thing we knew, we were all at this gathering in this Chinese restaurant, the cast and some of the crew, and John and George and Ringo and Keith Moon. And then there was an upright piano, I'll never forget it. And someone, I can't remember who it was, it was Garth Thomas, the first assistant director, started banging away on this upright piano. And everyone started singing, and obviously people doing Beatles songs and, like, you know, various other things. And everyone started to do a little bit of their own. And the only thing I did, which I do remember vividly, is I picked up a pair of spoons. Which my dad used to play,
right,
and taught me to play the spoons when I was a kid. And I started, and everyone just looked at me and went, oh man, that is brilliant. So suddenly I am now teaching the Beatles, Keith Moon, David Essex, Billy Fury, how to play the spoons. And suddenly all these spoons were appearing from the kitchens of the Chinese restaurant. Oh, it was hysterical. It was hysterical.
I mean, listening to you now, just painting the most incredible picture of an evening from the 1970s. Looking back, do you think people behaved with more freedom then, knowing that nobody was about to whip out a mobile phone and start filming them and sticking it all over social media?
Yeah, isn't that funny? We were talking about that last night, funny enough. How weird.
Yeah,
there was a kind of great freedom, wasn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, it is funny just hearing you nonchalantly talking about playing the spoons with Billy Fury, who, of course, was a massive star, wasn't he, when you were a boy growing up in 1950s Derbyshire. That must have been a surreal moment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I couldn't believe, I was next to Billy Fury. I mean, he was very poorly then, though. He looked so frail.
Yeah. What year is that, Robert? Sort of early 70s?
It was 71.
Right.
He was such a lovely, lovely man.
Oh, sorely missed. He made some amazing records in the 50s and 60s, around that time when obviously you were a kid. It was such a rich time for music in the UK at that point. Did you ever get taken as a kid to anything, you know, to any gigs or concerts?
No, because, you know, living in that kind of area as a kid, we didn't really. I mean, it was movies were the thing I used to go to a lot. That was my passion.
Right.
And there was no theatre, obviously, unless you went to Nottingham.
Sure.
But gigs, no. I don't remember going to ever seeing live music.
And what about the musical films from your childhood? I suppose around that time it's things like It's Trad Dad with Helen Shapiro, or Play It Cool, which of course starred Billy Fury, who we were just talking about. Or was it more theatre than musicals and cinemas for you as a kid?
I guess because I got involved in the theatre, that was my bag. But I did have a 10-set record player. Helen Shapiro is one of them. Frankie Vaughan, Green Door.
Right.
Because Helen Shapiro, of course, I became great friends with Duncan Weldon, who was married to her. Right. You know, Duncan's produced like 10 of the shows I've ever done on stage in the West End, you know, and actually passed away recently. Actually, talking of which, when did Dad die?
Oh, Benny died in the summer of 98.
It was 98. Rosie and I were talking about it last night because we had dinner with Mum and Dad, and I knew he was poorly.
Yeah, he'd you know, he had been suffering from cancer for longer than anyone knew, really, because he didn't tell anyone. So he kept working, literally, up until just a few days before he passed away.
So how old would Benny be now?
Oh, blimey, I guess he'd be about 93, something like that. Because you also lost your father quite recently, didn't you?
Dad passed away 10 years ago now, so he made it to 86, 85. Anyway, I can't remember. But I don't know how, because he'd talk about smoking. Oh, my God.
It's so different today, you know, with kids and smoking. Back then, everyone smoked, didn't they?
Actually, I don't see any kids smoke. See, I live with two keep-fit nuts. You know, one rugby player and one, and the other one who just works out all the time. And if I literally have to literally go down to the other side of my garden in a shed and have a sneaky fag. God, I mean, I got caught one by my 15-year-old son one night. I was down in the shed at night having a fag. He said, "What are you doing?" And I just stumbled it out. I thought, "I don't believe I'm doing this." 55 years of age and I'm stumbling out my fag.
It is amazing, isn't it, how quickly perception has changed. Looking back now, when you know, you see old movies or TV show reruns where everyone is smoking.
Well, it was the cool thing to do, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, all those commercials, there were all those Pall Mall and Peter Stuyvesant. That was the one that got me. People saw him as I'm the man with the strand, you know, walking along the strand with the jazz music.
Well, there again, it's the music that seems to have lodged itself in your mind. It does seem strange to me that music and musicals didn't really feature much in your formative years. I mean, so many of us associate you with musicals. Just from a personal point of view, me as a kid, I remember Me and My Girl had a huge impact on me. It was massive. And obviously that was the show that took you to Broadway.
Really interesting story about that, because Benny was great friends with the producer, Richard Armitage. It was Noel Gay Music.
Right.
And they had dinner together, and Richard said to Benny, "I'm thinking of doing Dad's musical," because Richard was Noel Gay's son.
Sure.
And Benny went, "Are you insane?" And Richard said, "No, who am I?" And he said, "But it's a pile of rubbish. It's an old, you know, silly musical."
Right.
And I remember Benny came to sit with your mum, and he said, "Thank God they didn't listen to me." It was a massive hit. I mean, extraordinary. Extraordinary.
It was massive, wasn't it? I mean, was that one of those scenarios where you knew straight away that the part was for you as soon as you saw the script?
I turned that down four times. I remember throwing one script into I was on a holiday somewhere, and they sent it over, and I read it was a pile of rubbish. Emma and I worked on that so hard.
Yeah.
We invented all that business and routines and stuff. We just lived for the show, really built it up.
It really was a fantastically, it was brilliant, but it was also a really happy show, wasn't it? We could really do with one of those right now.
They tried to revive it a couple of times.
Really?
It'll have its moment again, I think. It's a very uplifting musical. I mean, it was extraordinary in New York. I mean, I never unpacked my bags when I was in New York, because I was told, "You'll be going home a couple of nights after you've opened." Because shows used to open and close. The Butcher of Broadway, Frank Rich, used to close shows literally overnight.
Me and my girl, meant for each other, sent for each other, and liking it so. Me and my girl, it's no use pretending, we knew the ending a long time ago. Some little church with a big steeple, just a few people that both of us know, and we'll have love, laughter, be happy ever after. Me and my girl.
I'd love to hear you sighing, me and my girl, meant for each other, sent for each other, and liking it so. Me and my girl, it's no use pretending.
Many thanks to my very special guest, Robert Lindsay, who will be returning for the concluding part of that conversation on lgradio.online. Please just check the website to find out when that's on, and you can also find out when this show will be repeated. You're listening to lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.